We like to think of infrastructure as something slow, deliberate, and public. Roads paved by city councils, buildings approved by planning committees, policies debated in the open. But increasingly, the quiet architects of our daily lives are not governments or communities. They are corporations. And the changes they make ripple through our routines, our spaces, even the hidden codes of our cities, often without us noticing until the world around us has already shifted. Algorithms and the roads we take. Take something as ordinary as Google Maps. What began as a helpful tool for finding directions has become a force with the power to redirect the flow of entire towns. A few lines of code can funnel thousands of drivers down a side street, creating congestion where none existed, or cutting traffic where there once was gridlock. Local authorities, supposedly in charge of roads and urban planning, end up reacting to algorithmic decisions made in Mountain View, California. What was once a civic choice is now dictated by the logic of convenience. This isn't just a matter of traffic, it's about power. Algorithms can shape where commerce flows, which neighborhoods feel pressure from outsiders cutting through, and even how property values shift over time. A once quiet cul-de-sac might become a highway of strangers' cars because a map app said so. Residents have little say. Councils scramble to react, posting "do not enter" signs or adding speed bumps. Yet the first mover wasn't the city. It was a company line of code. The question here is subtle but important. Who owns the flow of a city? In theory, the public does. In practice, an algorithm can now reroute an entire economy of motion. And in a world where movement is power, that means corporations quietly hold the pen that redraws our maps. Access and the new architecture of delivery. The same is true of delivery services. When I was working for Amazon Flex, I was struck by how deeply corporations had embedded themselves into the built environment. We were given access codes to residential buildings as though we were staff. In some places, Amazon had negotiated so thoroughly with property managers that the app itself had a button to unlock a building's doors when the driver was nearby. Infrastructure that once belonged to the collective, your lock, your street, your sense of who is allowed in, was quietly re-engineered to serve the smoothness of prime deliveries. Think about what that means. Buildings once designed with tenants in mind are being altered to accommodate packages. Hallways get lockers installed. Entrances gain smart access systems designed first for couriers, not residents. The threshold of the home, once a boundary between private and public, is now porous. Its permeability decided not by civic debate, but by logistics efficiency. There is convenience here, no doubt. Packages arrive on time. Residents don't have to buzz every driver in. But there's also a creeping normalization that corporations deserve a skeleton key to our spaces, and that it is natural for architecture to bend around commerce. What used to be ours is now a shared corridor between us and the machine of delivery. Restaurants and the platform economy. Restaurants, too, now design themselves around Uber Eats and Deliveroo, creating dedicated waiting areas or rearranging kitchen flows to meet the rhythms of the app. These adjustments may seem minor, but they are part of a larger pattern. Our physical spaces bending to the will of platforms, not the other way around. Consider the ghost kitchens that now populate many cities, warehouses with no dining rooms, no waitstaff, no storefront presence. They exist only to fulfill app-based orders, optimized for delivery speed and volume rather than communal eating. Food culture itself is being reshaped, meals less as experiences to share, more as commodities to be dispatched through a digital pipeline. Even traditional restaurants adjust menus for apps, trimming items that don't travel well, or redesigning packaging to satisfy algorithmic ratings. The platform dictates not only how food is delivered, but what food gets made. It is a quiet yet profound shift. Our kitchens are no longer just cooking for people, they are cooking for the app's logic. Surveillance at the front door. And then there are the cameras. Doorbell systems like Ring were sold as conveniences. Never miss a package. See who's at your door. Yet in practice, they have become an extension of corporate and police surveillance, turning neighborhoods into networks of always-on eyes. In some cases, this has genuinely helped solve crimes. But the larger story is one of trade. We offer up our privacy for a promise of safety and ease, and the infrastructure of daily life shifts around that bargain. Ring, for instance, has partnered with police departments across the world, giving law enforcement unprecedented access to private cameras. A company that once promised personal peace of mind has become a proxy surveillance grid. And in many cases, homeowners are not fully aware of the agreements signed on their behalf. The broader effect is cultural. Neighbors begin to expect constant visibility. Suspicion becomes the norm, trust the exception. We forget what it feels like to live unseen, to be private in our own streets. The front door becomes not just a threshold of welcome, but a checkpoint in a surveillance network we never consciously consented to join. The price of seamlessness. The pattern is clear. We trade bits of autonomy for efficiency, pieces of privacy for convenience, chunks of civic control for seamlessness. Most of us do this without ever consciously weighing the exchange. We just want the package delivered faster, the food to arrive hotter, the road to be less congested. And in the background, corporations are quietly rewriting the rules of how our cities function, how our homes are accessed, how our lives are watched. The strange part is how natural it feels. We acclimate quickly to conveniences. A package arriving in 2 days once felt miraculous. Now 2 days feels like a delay. Each improvement raises the baseline of expectation, making us less likely to question the hidden costs. Convenience trains us not only to expect more, but to ask less. This is how infrastructures change, not through a single dramatic event, but through the slow, ordinary adoption of better ways. By the time we notice, the old world has already disappeared. Beyond convenience. This is not to say that all of it is bad. Convenience matters. Safety matters. But what is troubling is how little collective awareness or consent is involved. We are living inside infrastructures we did not vote for, being guided by algorithms we do not see, and surrendering control over spaces we once thought of as ours. The deeper question is whether we are capable of holding both truths together, the real benefits of these technologies and the invisible costs they impose. It is tempting to frame the choice as binary, embrace or reject, adopt or resist, but perhaps the real work is learning how to negotiate, to use these tools while also setting limits, to welcome their efficiency while guarding against their overreach. Because without that awareness, we risk waking up one day in a world shaped entirely by corporations, where public choices have been replaced by private code, and we no longer remember what it was like to have a say in how our own spaces were built. The reshaping of our lives is already underway. The only question is whether we will remain passive passengers or become conscious participants in deciding what that shape will be.